The foundation of all things done is self-awareness, right? So for me, everything is based on know thyself. And I often get on a stage and I say ridiculous things like know thyself and get thyself the hell out of the way. But the idea is that we know ourselves well enough to be able to make conscious decisions in the moment.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Attention, attention, attention. You're tuning into the Going North Podcast. And today's special sponsor is the Going North Podcast Advancement Shop, baby. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Because we got some brand new hats now to add to the collection. So that's right, folks. We got some Going North Podcast hats, some Advance Others to Advance Yourself hats, and a few other designs. So head over to the goingnorthpodcast.com shop, pick up a hat or two. And today on the highlight reel, builder for authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special awesome human for you today. That's right indeed, courtesy of podmatch.com, the wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts, and if they're cool, they're freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than two cucumbers indeed, because you're going to be in for a treat that's good enough to eat, my friends. That's right indeed, because today's guest is hailing all the way from South Africa, y'all. That's right indeed. It's always great when we get one of those random, super special, awesome international guests, y'all, because this lady's got a whole bunch of experience, because not only she joined the business of immortality with her fabulous book, she's also a high-demand keynote speaker, decorated executive coach, lecturer across many, many business universities, and as well as a conscious leadership advocate. So let's give it up for the lovely and magical Louise Mowbray. How you doing today, Louise?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thanks, Dom, and thank you for that fabulous introduction.
Hey, well, you popped on the camera fabulous. I'm like, oh, okay, all right, I have to actually be serious here and make sure it's a good one.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. But hey, as with all fabulous introductions, they're not allowed to be, I don't know, 3,000 years long, and they're probably only covered, I don't know, probably 3 seconds. So by filling in any cavities I may have missed about you and how you became the Louise that you are today.
Oh, goodness. Okay. So I'll give you the short version. I got really lucky. My parents are from the UK, and I was born in Cape Town. And I got to grow up in this magical continent. And I started my working life in London in the investment banking and then technology sectors. And then I started working for a listed company in the executive search sector. And I think that's really where the connection with people and culture and organizations and the understanding about how all of that stuff works really happened for me. So that kind of came alive, the magic happened there. And then I founded an executive search firm in London and worked with the venture capital and investment community, mostly with startups, funded startups. And that was a fantastic education in itself, really understanding, you know, tech and the drive behind the startup mind. And then I lived and worked in the Middle East for about 3.5 years. I was managing director and set up the operations for a British company across the Middle East, North Africa. And then went back to London and I thought, I'm only going to do what I'm deeply, deeply passionate about. And the next question is, what on earth is that? So it was an interesting time. And I remember thinking, well, it definitely involves developing and working with leaders and organizations and helping them to grow. And that's how things really started. And that was, gosh, my business will be 19 in May. So I still get to call myself a teenager, which is fantastic. It'd be nice to stay there, but and really over the last, God, 18, 19 years, the world has changed enormously, and I've changed with it. And my clients have changed, and what they've needed and what's needed today in terms of futures is very different to 18, 19 years ago. But the beautiful thing is that as things have shifted and changed, I've always had a sense of being able to connect the dots and have an understanding of what people need in order to be able to, embrace what's coming. And yes, conscious leadership is a big part of what I do. I started out in conscious leadership in about 2010, and it's been the golden thread that has run its way through my business and everything I do ever since. And in about 2017, I got into futures and foresight and instantly recognized that it was exactly what leaders need today in order to be able to think in multiple futures and be better prepared for whatever's coming. And it took a pandemic for that sort of, for futures to start having its moment and for organizations to start sitting up and really embracing, what does conscious business look like? What does the future look like? How do we actually deal with the future in a different way? Because we really are right at the beginning of a whole new era of work. And with that also came some courses in complexity theory, and I do some stuff around behavioral science as well. So all of this goes into the mix. And essentially, I'm constantly learning so that I can enable my clients to fare better. And that's the entire aim. That's where the joy is. So yeah, that's where it started, and that's where I'm at.
That's where she's at, y'all. That's right. Always growing and getting better and not butter. You'll love to say it. Y'all love to say it indeed. And it's kind of interesting that you said multiple futures, because in a way, folks were like, oh yeah, we thought future was like, all right, cool. We're actually gonna get closer to the good old Jetson show and communicate via Zoom and Skype and whatnot, even though folks didn't. They forgot about Skype. Like, wait, that's still a thing? It's like, I thought it was all Zoom now and Teams and other things. And then out of nowhere, AI shows up. I think it was, what, 2023, if I'm not mistaken. It's like, oh, hey, this is the next evolution, huh? All right. The machines are coming to take us alive.
Yeah, that's hilarious, Tom, because the AI, we know it's been around since the 50s, right? And it powers every single thing that we do. But yeah, I think that our ability to interact with AI changed the game. And it's definitely the source of a lot of information and misinformation. And of course, clicks and likes and shares sell, headlines sell. So, I think we're being terrorized by the thought of it taking over our lives. And yet we have the power to, enact whatever we want it to be. I think a lot of people just don't realize how much power they have.
So right about that indeed, because we still have the power. That's right indeed. We still have the power. It's like, hey, we created the AI with the information, everything, and created everything else around us too. And the good news is, yep, other folks create their magical success. So my goodness, so with all of your coaching over the years and always adding more certifications under your belt and making sure your brain stays as big as possible to help folks to be their best selves, what would you consider your biggest lesson learned from one of your coaching clients that has improved your game as a coach?
Gosh, there have been so many, John. Every single client is a brand new landscape, a whole new environment. And I think that's why I love what I do so much, because no two situations or no two people or no two teams are exactly the same. And that's what keeps it alive, because it keeps me on my toes. I don't think we can ever sort of presume or assume anything about anyone or anything or the future, in fact. But I think probably one of the biggest lessons I've ever had in my business life, and there've been quite a few, was when I owned my executive search consultancy. And it looked like the markets would crash. And we were starting to get all the signals through the market, the money wasn't flowing. And I think when you're in executive search, you feel it first, because, you know, appointments aren't being made, fees are not being paid, etc. You really feel like the canary in the gold mine. And I remember that, you know, there was a really tricky decision to make, either keep the business running and sort of keep going in the hope that it would sort of, the markets would resurrect themselves, or pay people redundancies. And we had enough cash flow to either pay redundancies or to keep it, you know, grinding till the end. And my business partners wanted to keep it going, and I was in direct opposition. I wanted to pay redundancies and make sure that people were taken care of so that they could at least have the time to go and find themselves another job. And I can remember sitting in my lawyer's offices at the time, just in tears, and just amazed that, you know, I would be in such conflict with the people I'd built a business with and who I knew so well. But it was a fantastic lesson, and probably one of the toughest things, to close the doors on a business that has been vibrant and held so much promise in a market that, you know, just wasn't open. And it was the right decision in the end, but gosh, it was the painful one. It was the difficult one. So I think we're often hit by a lot of these decisions over time, and each one shapes who we are. I often think the most difficult decision probably is the best one. It probably means more pain to begin with, but ultimately you're able to look back at it and think, yeah, I did the right thing.
I'm talking about these. I'm talking about indeed. Because, yeah, those tough decisions are the ones we all have to really make, especially those who are in true leadership. It's like, hey, sure. It comes with the territory. It's like, all right, we started something. I guess we might as well finish it, and let's see if we can finish something on a good note and come out with something, as opposed to going out with nothing and in the red.
Yeah, and hurting people in the process. Yeah,
definitely indeed. Just don't want to pile that oil on top of everything else. Oh man. So my goodness. So I guess now with that in mind, like basically helping to start that business and then starting your own business. So my goodness. So with, I guess, with that journey as an entrepreneur being a tough one, having to do all the metaphorical hopping in a way, like, my goodness, any, I guess, words of encouragement for those who may have gone through that time and they may have not been able to build themselves back up after possibly losing their own business?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, because we always talk about resilience. You know, people always talk about resilience as something, you know, that comes along and something bad happens and we bounce back. And that's not the reality of it. You know, resilience, we don't bounce. There's no bouncing. You know? There is no bouncing at all anywhere. It's, you know, we literally hit a rock bottom, and we, you know, we sort of stumble forward, trying to find our way. And I think the most important thing is a deep compassion for ourselves and for the other people involved, because there are always others. It's, you know, it's never in isolation. If we can find that, dig deep and find that compassion for ourselves, and look back on the decisions that we made, not as being wrong, or we should have, or could have, or would have done something different. Or yes, of course, with hindsight and wisdom and, or, you know, resilience, all the things that we learn in life, that life is a series of, I always think of the infinity symbol, you know, where it's a series of high highs and then not so great lows, and then we find a way up, and we learn and we grow. And I think that this compassion piece is so important. And the other thing is not to get stuck in the narrative in our heads. You know, often if we look back at a really difficult time, you know, there's something in psychology called reframing. How we frame things can change. You know, we can actually look back at something really difficult that happened in the past and know that we did the very best that we could at the time. That's enough. You know, that just to know that at the time, with the resources, the insight, the consciousness, the wisdom, the understanding, the environment that we were in, we did the best that we were capable of at the time. If we'd purposely trashed that situation and created a problem for ourselves. Different story, but I don't know anyone who does that on purpose, right? So there's a huge amount of compassion for that person that we were trying to resurrect or save something or get it going. And then, the realization that something good always comes out of a tricky situation. That's how we learn and grow. That's what learning, unlearning, and relearning is. Nobody ever talks about the unlearning part of that. We always talk about the learning because that's always a fun journey and it's like taking on new stuff and God, that's exciting and that's interesting and whole new worlds we can build. But the unlearning has to happen in order for us to relearn. So we constantly need to let go of ways of being, ways of thinking, ways of understanding the world in order to allow the new perspectives to come in order to allow the new growth to happen. And we never talk about that because it's messy, it's in the middle, it's the messy middle. It's never pretty, it never feels good. We all want to wake up every day inspired and just powered by an idea that we're, chasing after. I mean, who doesn't want to be like that, right? We don't want to be in this messy interim space, but it's very necessary because without that, we wouldn't come out of it stronger and more compassionate. And with the wisdom that we need to take on the new thing. So for me, it's just a part of life. And if we view it as a part of systemic part of life, then perhaps the perspective, how we frame things changes. Sometimes we can look back at a really tricky time that we went through. And when we look back at it and understand all the different perspectives, everybody's role in that situation, and the environment that we're in, we can start to get a better understanding of why things happened. And then it's so much easier. But if we stay with the narrative that everybody else was wrong and they messed it up for us, then we're in deep trouble. Then it's very difficult to recover and to go through that, that messy middle and come out with something that is profoundly useful. And the other thing we've got to remember is that there's something extraordinary that happens when we blame others. We call it the blame game. So we get a hit of dopamine when we're right and we make other people wrong. And that's it. It's a, one of those kind of crazy kind of dopamine addiction things, right? And we're seeing it everywhere in the world. I'm right, you're wrong. And there's a lot of division and just about anywhere that you look. And it always, whenever I see that or I come across it, or I hear it in myself, I instantly think, gosh, that person needs a hit of dopamine and they're looking in all the wrong places. So we've got to step back because if we look back at difficult situations and make everybody else wrong, which is so easy to do, we want to feel justified. We want to feel that we've come out of it with some semblance of respect for ourselves or, some semblance of self-respect or integrity intact. And, sometimes we didn't. Sometimes we didn't do the right thing. And okay, but at the time we did the best we could. So, going back to your question, I think that everybody can recover, but it's not about bouncing back to what you were. It's about emerging from that situation better off, wiser, more compassionate, and able to take on the next thing with the kind of vigor that we want to.
That's right indeed, all the vigor. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. That's right. Folks are like, man, we are not a ball. Just because the fetal position exists doesn't mean we're a ball. We're not gonna bounce back. It's about emerging, y'all.
Yeah.
That's right. It's about emerging stronger, better, y'all.
Absolutely. No bouncing.
Right indeed. Ways is like no bouncing, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. She's got the wonderful lecturer stick, y'all, pointing it at you. Nope, don't do it. Don't bounce. Don't do it. Come back stronger. Get in the flower, then come out the flower.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, bounce if you want to, but don't expect it in the messy middle. It's more like a dribble. Dribble our way forward and find the wisdom en route. Yeah.
You go. That's right indeed. Better yet, maybe get on the trampoline, then you can bounce. Yeah, that there we go. I think that's the happy medium. Oh, man. And And I'm glad you mentioned unlearning, because if I'm not mistaken, that's actually one of the chapters in your magical book, if I'm not mistaken, right? Or at least part of one of your chapters in the book about learning and relearning and, of course, unlearning.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I you know, the foundation of all things done is self-awareness, right? So for me, everything is based on know thyself. And I often get on a stage and I say ridiculous things like know thyself and get thyself the hell out of the way. But the idea is that we know ourselves well enough to be able to make conscious decisions in the moment without just reacting, to our buttons being pushed. And I think that this learning, unlearning, relearning is, it's in all aspects of our lives. It could be a topic, in other words, we have a sense of what's coming in the future. And instead of resisting it, we decide to throw ourselves onto a course there's so much free stuff available online. We can pretty much learn about anything. And with that process of learning comes an unlearning of what we thought to be true and solid and real. And some of it will be replaced by something new, and parts of it we get to keep because it's still consistent. And then, of course, the relearning, bringing that together is so much easier, so much more interesting. But that happens inside us too, as human beings, as we grow. Things that, if we think about our mental models growing up, how we think, how we understand the world, how we feel about things, how we physiologically react to things, all of that is shaped by our experiences growing up, by the household we grew up in, by the schools we went to, and the teams we were part of, by our high highs and our hideous lows, and everything in between shapes who we are. And those lenses on the world, that way of understanding the world, parts of it need to fall away. They need to evolve. And as something new comes along, so we're constantly learning something new about ourselves, about other people, about how the world works, about, how we connect with one another as human beings. So that this kind of process is happening all the time. And I think the difficulty is if we get stuck somewhere on that route. And, if we think of life as more of a flow situation, we're so much better off. I remember somebody once saying to me years ago, I think I was in my late 20s, and it was an ex-boss, and she said to me, Louise, you're not a salmon, stop swimming against the current. And I remember just thinking, okay, so I must go with it, I must flow with it. And, of course, you don't want to be sort of swept into a net or, over a cliff. But the point is, go with it, find your way through it. And I think if we resist what's going on around us and the signs of what to come, then it's just a little crazy, both in terms of what's going on in the world, but also within ourselves, within our relationships, within our family environments, our teams, our connections with others. There's a constant shifting and learning. And I think that's, for me, part of the joy of life. And if we frame it that way in our own minds, it's a hell of an easier journey than resistance.
Okay. So I'm talking about indeed. So do you think that's probably one of the biggest things you had to unlearn in your career, like maybe even life or your business, is just resistance and not always putting up resistance when it's not necessary?
About resistance. I think to be in an environment where you're working with other people and be in a position of resistance is mad. Put yourself in an environment where you don't need to do that. So I think this know thyself, under the self-awareness, the self-knowledge, self-mastery is key. That for me is the golden thread through all of life, that conscious awareness of self and of others. And if you find that you're constantly in resistance, then either there's something going on internally that you need to sort out, that needs some growth and development, or you've put yourself in the wrong environment. So I think a lot of people, I learned this in my headhunting years. And I saw this with thousands of people who had, they had the right stuff. They had the right education, the right degrees. They joined the right companies with the right name on the door and the right, they'd made their way up through organizations and progressed. And yet were deeply, deeply unhappy and hugely resistant to what was going on around them. And the question is, you know, are we doing things for the right reasons? Are we doing it for the name on the door and, you know, the sense of, I guess, what the world expects of achievement? Or are we doing it for our own sense of, you know, meaning and self-satisfaction? So I think to know yourself and to do things that are aligned with things that actually, you know, we always talk about passion and purpose. And I think that, you know, that's been so overworked, we're almost immune to it. But I think that finding satisfaction in things, finding meaning in things, finding the reason for actually doing stuff, that, you know, it makes me laugh, because often when I think of, you know, how corporates sort of measure engagement in their organizations, there's a lot of surveys that go on in terms of corporate engagement. And I always laugh and sort of think, you know, when you put your head on the pillow at night and you look lovingly in your partner's eyes, you don't look at them and say, oh my goodness, I was so engaged today. You're more likely to say, oh, you know, I really hate my boss, or, you know, this company is just heading in the wrong direction, or, you know, I mean, today was really fun, you know, it was really cool, we learned some cool stuff. So how we think about our place in work and how we spend all of these hours of our day, I think it's really important to get connected to who we are and why we do what we do and what gives us pleasure. You know, what does that look like, and how can you fashion that? What's the next thing that you could learn that would take you closer to that? And as we kind of learn and grow in that way, we get closer and closer to things that actually, you know, we can sit back at the end of the day or gaze into our partner's eyes and say, wow, that was so satisfying. I really enjoyed that. I got a lot out of it. And I think that those things are really important. And, you know, I think that we've almost had a sort of shift in how people think of work and their place in it since the pandemic. And how could we not be changed by it? You know, we lost so much. And almost on an annual basis, we've had a major change between wars and AI being released to, you know, the rest of us, you know, the rest of the world, and we're able to interact with it. And we start to begin, you know, we're beginning to get a sense of what this new era of work is looking like. We know that, of course, we've always known that change is a constant, but I don't think we've ever felt it as viscerally as we do today. And, you know, when we look around us in a working environment, at any group of people that we're with, we've also got to appreciate that 38% of the people who are actually with us at that time are struggling with burnout symptoms or reporting 50% are reporting mental health issues. So there's a huge shift from what we thought to be safe and solid and true in terms of leaders and how they acted and what have you, to that shift that came during the pandemic, which dislodged all of that. And we're all trying to find our feet and imagine a new world for ourselves. And I think this is the messy middle. I think that's where we are right now. And that's part of the reason why I wrote this book, was to give people the thinking and the tools to be able to embrace this new era of work and be able to navigate their way through better.
Navigate their way through better, indeed. So speaking of navigating, what was it like navigating your way to the finish line to get your book out there? It's your first solo book, if I'm not mistaken. Relevant, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I co-authored some other stuff. Yeah, it was bizarre. You know, I just finished writing a couple of pieces for a co-authored book with a think tank that I belong to. And I just thought, I got the bug. And the other thing is that all of the topics that I've written about are the culmination of decades of work, and all the pieces of the puzzle were there in terms of, you know, what's needed, what's coming, what's next, and how to prepare people. And when I started writing it in April last year, it wrote me. I mean, I did not write this. It wrote me. I mean, it would not put me down. I mean, I was getting up at 4 a.m. and, you know, finding every spare half an hour I could, and, you know, getting really kind of irritated when I was pulled away into normal business. this book wrote me, and it didn't stop until about the end of August. And then, of course, we've got to get into all the messy stuff of editing and what have you. But it was an absolute joy to write. And I could have kept going. You know, I, I, I could have just kept going. There's so much to talk about. There's so much to try and understand in terms of what's going on in the world, and so many ways that we can be better prepared. I think when you've worked with as many clients as I have done over a long period of time, there's not much that you haven't seen, and yet you never see it again in the same form. You know, that's what's so refreshing about it. And I think what we're working with now is, and a lot of people are just still sitting in, you know, in their minds in a world that either will resurrect itself, or will sort of return to some form of normal. And not, I don't think we know what normal is anymore, right? Did we ever? I mean, if we think about all of the changes that we thought were significant in the couple of decades before that. So it's really interesting. I mean, how do we start thinking in big picture thinking? How do we connect the dots about what's going on around the world? Because even if we run, I don't know, a local store, something happening on the other side of the world could have significant impact on our supply chain and our clients. And you know, the cost of the food in a basket has changed significantly over the last few years. The cost of heating, you know, just, we just look at the cost of living. We've seen extraordinary changes and challenges. And I think that, of course, with everything going on in the world, all of these things also not only have an immediate impact, but a delayed impact. And I think we've got to just start thinking much bigger picture and not getting too attached to life needing to be a certain way. So if we can think in multiple futures, if we can think in terms of a number of different possibilities, then mentally and emotionally we're better prepared for whatever comes rather than just hoping for a particular outcome, which I think a lot of people do. I mean, that's human nature. We want it to be a certain way. And yet we've been surprised almost on an annual basis, you know, with things not being that way, and in fact not being what we could have predicted. And the beautiful thing about, you know, doing futures work is that it's not about prediction. No one can predict the future. It's impossible. But we can create plausible scenarios in our minds. Well, and, you know, through various different strategies and exercises, if you want to get beyond the individual into organizations, where things are likely to happen, or a variety of things are likely to happen on the basis of what we understand today and what's coming. But then, of course, there are always surprises. So how do we develop this mental agility? How do we develop this emotional agility? Because we always think of ourselves from the neck up, you know. We forget that, of course, we feel things, and you know, we have intuition, and we have sixth sense, and we have a sense of what's going on. So how do we develop that creativity and intuition in ourselves and start to value it more rather than perhaps just valuing the, you know, the intellectual? And I think that's really important.
Important indeed, important indeed. It's actually funny how you mentioned how the book wrote you. It's like, yep, that's right indeed. She inked it when she thought about it. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Had all these ideas. It's like, yeah, that's right. We're creating something, y'all. We're creating something good, creating something fabulous, creating something that's going to help you advance, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. So my goodness, so basically getting to the finish line, is there another book in the works, or are you still going to focus on promoting this one and your business?
You know, Dom, I did things. We've got an English expression, which is doing things arse about face. In other words, doing things the wrong way around. And and that's exactly what I did with this book. Most people would, you know, get into marketing mode 6 months before they publish, and then publish, and you know, et cetera. But this book wrote me, so I had no choice. It wrote me. It needed to go. It was published. And there's so much amazing stuff that's coming out of it. I've been running a masterclass a year before I even wrote the book on future-focused leadership. So, you know, all of the concepts in the book and the thinking and the ideas and the self-awareness and understanding that's so important for leaders today, it has been tried and tested again and again. And for me, that's the most important thing right now is getting on stages and speaking about this and helping to ignite people's imaginations and thinking about what's to come and prepare them so much better than and I think many of us are today. And also these masterclasses are proving to be unbelievably powerful for teams. And I, you know, that's a big part of what I do is working with teams who need to work more coherently together. You know, we've talked about collaboration, cooperation for so long, but what does it mean in today's world? It's very, very tricky to navigate without that deep coherence in terms of the teams that we're working in. So that's vitally important. So it always, for me, it starts with know yourself, and then of course work coherently as a team with whatever you're working with in whatever sector. So for me, it's not just about selling a book. You know, it's wonderful. I hope I help people to think about the world more broadly and to put some of the stuff in place for themselves and to really benefit from this, because there's so much in there that, you know, it doesn't matter which way, you know, whatever you're coming, what direction you're coming at this from, hopefully there'll be enough in there for you to be able to empower yourself to do what you need to do in your business life and in your career and for your family and community. But at the same time, I also want to very much inspire teams to work on a much more purpose-driven basis, because I think that's what people need, the world needs. And that's, you know, being purpose-driven, conscious business is a big part of who I am and what I do. And if I can inspire that in organizations, then of course the impact is far-reaching.
Funny enough, speaking of far-reaching, folks probably have to take care of home before they reach far, because I know you even cover self-care in the book as well. So what does Louise do for self-care?
Yeah, I'm a big walker, Dom. I love to walk. Yeah, and actually, I started walking with a group pre-pandemic. Of course, in London, I walk everywhere. You know, it's great when you've got a city, when, you know, you're walking all the time. And I can remember during the pandemic, during lockdown, we had this sort of group of people in the neighborhood, about 12 people, and we kept each other sane during the hours we were allowed to go out. You remember those days? Feels like a just a memory sometimes, right? But today, I mean, a walk, a talk, and a coffee, it's like therapy. It's just beautiful. So I do that, and I've been into yoga for a long, long time. And then, you know, things like taking care of mind, body, spirit. I think that we underestimate how much incredible clarity we have, how much emotional stability we have, and how much purpose and meaning we can extract out of life when we actually take care of our whole selves. You know, so what we eat and the company we keep. You know, there's that old joke that we are the result of the five closest people to us. So make sure that we surround ourselves with the types of people that we want to be. So I think all of these things, all of these parts are so important. But the problem is that we know it all, you know, cognitively, intellectually, we understand that we really probably shouldn't eat stuff with MSG in it or a whole lot of E stuff in it. But, you know, we do. And I mean, that's just self-harm in my world. And the extraordinary benefits of actually taking care of ourselves mean that we can pretty much wake up and be, gosh, on the ball, which is, you know, full of energy. And, you know, yes, doesn't mean you're not going to have, you know, down days and tricky days and, you know, as I say, the rhythm of life. But we're so much better equipped to be able to build that resilience within ourselves if we're taking care of our whole soul. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff I do day to day, which is just, you know, it's part of who I am rather than being a little routine. And, you know, I sort of, some people set aside time just for this and then they get on with doing what they do. For me, I like to build it into my waking moments, you know, so being in a meditative state, walking in nature. I mean, that fuels the soul, right? You know, coffee fuels my soul too. So
me too, definitely.
Yeah, so I think we've got to think of it as whole selves, not things that we do at certain times of the day. Yes, lovely, but how can we build it into the fabric of who we are? So for me, that's, you know, that involves, you know, constant practice and building things into my day to day. You know, if I've got a spare 15 minutes, I'll go outside and stand on the grass and just breathe, you know, enjoy this beautiful universe that we have the luxury of being, you know, here for a short time.
Yeah. And it feels like it's getting shorter and shorter. Time keeps moving too
That
dang fast.
is so true. Now, gosh, let's not talk about that. It's going way too fast.
It's like, yeah, I could have swore that big thing that took over the planet was 4 years ago, but I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's really five and we're just tripping. I don't know.
Maybe it's all just a game and we're tripping anyway, you know.
Oh yeah, that's right indeed. Yeah, that's right indeed. Yeah, too bad the tutorial about the game was bad the first 18 years apparently. Yeah, it was a long tutorial and it wasn't even a good
Wow.
one depending on who it was.
Yeah. I think we hear that a lot, right? A lot of people have a similar take on things. Yeah, and it's in our power to change the next, right?
Definitely the power to change the next indeed. So setbacks are always going to happen in life and business. Has there been one major one that sticks out to you that actually was a stepping stone for a newer, better situation?
Oh gosh, so many. I don't think I've ever grown or taken a step forward without a setback. Or without realizing that something, maybe it wasn't even a setback, maybe it was just, you know, I'm sitting here paddling away and I'm, you know, for the sake of paddling, why am I doing this? Why am I treading water here? Because I think a lot of life, you know, there are a lot of days that go by that we look back and we think, you know, gosh, I mean, I was just treading water that day. There wasn't anything particularly inspiring that came out of it or anything. You know, and I think that's enough. If I have a few days like that in a row, that's enough to get me thinking, right, what do I need to do to change the energy around this? You know, I definitely want more out of life than, you know, that sort of treading water feeling. But, you know, every now and again, there's something kind of cataclysmic comes along. And I think when you're in a business like mine, often it's the first thing to get cut out of budgets. When times are hard, I mean, it's, you know, it's, and yet it's the craziest thing. You know, we should be investing more in people, you know, in tricky times. And yet companies seem to think that it's an easy thing to cut. So I think that, you know, often I've sort of kicked myself during economic downturns or crashes or September 2008 when the markets crashed globally and sort of look at my business and think, gosh, you know, I need a product. I need something that sells itself when I'm fast asleep and is not touched by, you know, market ups and downs. So yeah, that typically happens when, you know, when something bad happens. And of course, when life isn't tricky, then, you know, I don't even think about it. But yeah, I think sometimes that when the difficult times happen, my best work emerges. Because I have to stop, rethink what I'm doing, you know, what's needed here, what am I not hitting the spot on, what do I need to rethink, you know, learn, unlearn, relearn, all of that. And you know, sometimes if we're too comfortable, we don't get that, we don't stretch, and we're just delivering stuff that actually is long past its sell-by date. So for me, it's about really listening to those signals and trying to act before I get to the point of I'm just treading water, because then I don't feel I'm of value to myself or anybody else for that matter. So yeah, it's you know, at the time it's hideous and it's painful and it's not fun. Hindsight, I always call it hindsight, is a beautiful thing, because when we look back, we realize that we got exactly what we needed out of that situation, and it forced us to shift and change. Even if it's a slight change that has a completely different trajectory, I love that sort of 1 degree thing, you know, shift by 1 degree, and of course we shift our whole universe. And what does it take for that 1 degree to occur? And yeah, often for me it's happened when I've had a sense that the market is about to trip in the wrong direction or things are not going to be great. And I really had to go back and rethink things and take a step up and do something about learning something new, letting go of something that needs to go and moving forward. So if I look back at all of them, they were magic moments in hindsight. At the time, not fun.
Yeah, they're definitely not fun when you're going through it. It's like, yeah, it's actually kind of funny. If I'm not mistaken, was it kind of sight you said earlier, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, I often think of hindsight versus kindsight, because if we can look back and be kind to ourselves, hindsight, yes, of course, we can always see that we could have done something different. But at the time, we have to be kind to ourselves, because at the time, we did the best thing we thought, you know, that we felt empowered to do at the time. So we need kindness, kindsight. We need that compassion for ourselves, because then we can forgive and move on, forgive ourselves primarily and move on. And if we're able to do that, then that's where the resilience starts to grow. And that ability to pick ourselves up and dribble forward rather than, I'm not sure where the bouncy thing came from, but
no escape.
It always
bounce
sounds,
back to it.
Well, why would you want to bounce back? Because the environment, no, nothing is going backwards. I mean, you know, I think that the probably if I sort of leave with one thought here, it is that in every decision we make today, and I think this is something that can be terrifying, actually, or we just don't think about it at all because it's too big a thing to contemplate. But in every macro decision we make today, or even the little micro decisions, we are, in fact, creating the future that we will live in at some point in a year's time, 6 months, 3 months, 18 months, 5 years. The decisions we make today will dictate what that looks like. And yet, when we get there, when we get into the future, because it's just a construct, it doesn't exist, the environment, the context that we arrive in will be completely different to the one we've left, the one that we made the decision in. And I think when we realize that, we have a lot more agency, because human beings find it incredibly difficult to imagine the future without taking the present with us. And if the last few years have taught us anything, and that is that the present is gone in a flash. It just takes some decision somewhere in the world and everything shifts. So I think that the key thing is to really invest in ourselves and taking care of ourselves, mind, body, spirit, the works, and building our ability to think more broadly about things, not get too attached to things having to be a certain way, because by the time we get there, the whole world would have changed and we won't want it the way we thought we did because it won't be suitable anymore. So it's just to have a bit of a light touch and to be able to dance a little with a little more ease in terms of what we're working with day to day.
As I'm talking about indeed. Well, two questions, and I'll let you make a run for it. So the first one is a fun question about your magical book, Relevant, Future Focused Leadership. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
Oh, my goodness. A food? Oh, my gosh. I remember being in Hong Kong once and being in this extraordinary restaurant. I love chili. And there was this bowl of smoked whole chili peppers. And it was full of prawns, but the whole smoked chili peppers were dry. And it was full of these extraordinary prawns. The flavor that came out of that was extraordinary. And I'm sure some people don't love prawns. So I have to think of something organic as a, you know, perhaps as a, for those vegetarians and vegans out there. But yeah, for me, it would be that. It would be the layers and layers of subtlety and flavor, rather than a sort of, so there's the boldness of it and there's the obvious flavors, but if you work through it, there is this infusion of lots of layers and lots of flavors that spark all sorts of things, hopefully, in the reader's mind. And if that happens, then I've done my job well.
That's right indeed, that's right indeed. Almost thought you were gonna call us some Häagen-Dazs ice cream for a second.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, actually, salted caramel. It's definitely my drug of choice. Salted caramel Häagen-Dazs. Actually, when the pandemic hit, I can remember sitting on my sofa and Häagen-Dazs, salted caramel, and just watching what was going on in the world and thinking, I wonder how this is going to pan out. I wonder what this is going to look like. And just staying open and curious. And Häagen-Dazs was my drug of choice.
That's right
Well
indeed.
done for picking that Dom. My secret is out there.
Don't worry about it. That just means folks know what to do if they have a conversation with Jim first. Let's sneak some Häagen-Dazs ice cream your way. Make sure it's in a portable fridge or a portable cooler with ice in
I need a big deep
it.
fridge. Yeah,
It's like, hey, I brought a peace offering, even though I didn't do anything to make you mad. To my knowledge, anyway. It's like, all
we
right.
go. It works every time. It's guaranteed.
That's right, Dave. Well, we're coming down to the magical question every guest gets to receive, and that is if you don't wake up tomorrow and you are 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
Oh my gosh, can I do this every year? That would be So my advice would be develop a system, Louise, where you could actually have the wisdom you have today and you're 25. I mean, that would be magical. You know, you almost read my mind on that one, Dom, because I constantly say to friends and colleagues and whatever, gosh, I just wish I had this wisdom and I was young again. But also, I keep thinking of the things I want to study. You know, if I was young, I mean, what would I study today? There are so many options available. You know, would it be anthropology? I mean, you know, would it be computer science? Oh no, I need philosophy. Oh, I need a bit of, I need a bit together. You know, I'm like constantly thinking of things I'd love to delve into. And I think that if I was waking up today and I was 25, yeah, I would find a way of waking up every day and feeling that way.
There you go. That's right, indeed. So you still got time. It's not like you're 90 years old.
Yeah, I think I'm doing it, but of course, you know, the body just keeps getting older, but I think the mind is still 25.
Oh yeah, that's right, indeed. Yeah, that's the thing about the aging process. It's like energy management becomes a huge thing every passing year. It's like, oh man, like what's going on?
Hey, don't
Why
talk like
is
that. That's not allowed.
that's all good. Comes with the territory and observation. Besides, you look fabulous anyway. Besides saying it's like still young. It's like folks will be like,
Oh,
yeah,
thank you.
like she looks too fabulous talking like she's old, like freaking lies, freaking lying to people. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Well, the good
Well,
news is.
age and wisdom, beautiful things.
Heck yeah, indeed. That's right, indeed. And it's good when they come together. Sometimes age comes alone.
Yeah, never a truer word said, Dom. Never a truer word. That's, yeah, maybe that's what we should all strive for, to have those come together. Yeah.
Right, indeed. That's right, indeed. They don't even need to be married either. Just make sure they stay together.
Yeah, I actually wrote a chapter about wisdom because it's such an interesting topic. And I don't know about you, but I always look for wisdom in a room, right? I'm definitely drawn to it, attracted to it. I want to learn from, you know, certain people. And I think, you know, sort of often if we look around a room where we don't find that wisdom, it can feel, that meeting can feel pretty empty, or that gathering can feel pretty empty. But every now and again we find it, and it's just such a spark, you know, we're almost drawn to it, attracted to it. So yeah, there's something elusively wonderful about it. And I'm always looking for it in others. So yeah, it's a fabulous topic.
Sounds like more of that know thyself and get the hell out of the
Yeah, there's a theme there, right?
Hey, that's a good Louisism right there, indeed, because it's so true. It's like, hey, once you know yourself, get out the way. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right. At least get the negative part of you out of the way. It's like, yep. It's like, all right, let's use this feedback as a lesson. All right, I usually do this thing. Let's focus on this thing. It's like, oh, if I see a fork in the road and it's actually a spoon, I'm going in the wrong direction. It's like, all right, let's get out of our own way
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think that a lot of us do get in our own way. You know, we put up barriers where we don't need to, they don't need to be there. And I think this learning, unlearning, that's part of the unlearning process, is letting go of things we don't need anymore and taking on new things that better serve us today and well into the future.
Yes, ma'am, indeed. Well, into the future, indeed. Well, folks need to probably learn more about the lovely Louise and probably add more of her content to their lives, indeed. So, for those who need to do just that and cop some copies of your magical book, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon. And there's also a link on my site. So if you want to get in touch, my site is probably the best way, or LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn.
There you go, LinkedIn Louise. That's right, indeed. She's LinkedIn, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. So, we're going to put a link to all of her wonderful wares in the show notes that we can keep up with her journey, indeed, because she's only just getting started. She's got a whole boatload of content ready and waiting for you to dive into and apply to your life. And we can get those metaphorical six pack leadership abs, y'all. That's right, indeed. Show up your tone up, y'all. That's right, indeed. Stay relevant. That's right, because the world keeps moving fast, y'all. That's right, indeed. Moving fast, indeed. Oh, I forgot that. So, you're going to be doing your book in audio format anytime in the future?
Yeah, that's something that is in the works. So when it's published, I'll let you know. But yeah, definitely in the works.
Ooh, is it you reading it?
Yeah, that's probably why
Yay! All right.
it's probably why it's taking a little longer than it might do if I got someone else to do it. Yeah.
I do not care. I'm glad it's you. All right, good. All right. I love when authors read their books, especially you with that accent of yours. I'm like, yep, that's right indeed. Don't waste that thing. That's right indeed. It's good for ears. It's like giving Häagen-Dazs salted caramel to people's ears. Like, don't waste it. That's right indeed.
Thanks, Tom. I'll remember that the next time I'm sitting rereading the same paragraph in front of the microphone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good thing to remind yourself of because yeah, I've been in your shoes of reading your own book and other books, and yeah, it's not as easy as folks think. It's an actual performance, and half the time you're probably questioning your own intelligence. It's like, dude, I was taught how to read. I know how to read. Like, why can't I say this one word?
Yeah, exactly. Then you just got to walk away and put your feet on the grass 15 minutes and ignore it all and pretend come back again. Yeah, there's nothing like a good walk. I think that's the one thing I've learned over the years, how to change your brain chemistry instantly. Just go for a walk. Yeah.
Well, amen to that. Well, folks not only need to walk, but they need to run over to your magical site and run over to Louise's content. Indeed, be on the lookout for that audio book with the Louise special added on to us, and she'll be reading it herself. Indeed, that's right. Indeed, so you're going to be in for another treat that's good enough to eat, y'all. So, cop some of the stuff and stay in contact with the indeed. So, any parting words before we close up shop?
Dom, just that I wish for everybody big picture thinking and broad horizons and deep breaths, lots of walks, good coffee, and whatever whatever your Häagen-Dazs flavor might be. With so much going on in the world, it's really important to get centered and to get very focused about making sure that we're in good shape to be able to really make sense of what's going on better and navigate our way forward and make decent decisions. So I wish for everybody that.
If you're listening to this, that means you're one cool individual. If you want to be cooler than two cucumbers, share this episode with someone that you think will enjoy it too. And be sure to subscribe and keep being fabulous.